People of the Salt Water is a new book that illuminates the history of the Gahatla First Nation on the North Coast. Charles Menzies is a UBC anthropology professor. He's also the author of the book, and he's also a Gahatla band member, and that's where we've reached him this morning. Hi, Charles.
Hey, good morning.
Nice to have you back on the show. It's a beautiful book. What motivated you to write it?
Well, I really didn't have a choice.
How so?
Well, I mean, I've been doing research out here and working with the community, doing different projects, and there is kind of an expectation that you bring something forward. Now, also as an academic, we're supposed to produce something, but there's also an important commitment that when researchers engage with communities that they really have tangible results, and also that those tangible results are presented in community before they become more generally presented. Like this. So we were out here, and yesterday was the official book launch, where it was presented to community.
And what was the reaction?
Well, so far, people have been really impressed and pleased, and I mean, I'm sure I've made the little errors here and there, and maybe some bigger ones and little ones and all things like that, but that's part of the process. But people have just been really quite overwhelmed and appreciative, and I think there's something about just reading about oneself, or writing about home in one way, and writing to people about home, and is a kind of interesting experience that people are really thrive from seeing that.
Mm-hmm. I noticed one chapter in particular. I felt a lot of emotion reading that chapter, and it was about the abalone.
Oh yes, no, that's a really profound experience. I mean, and in fact, for many people, the impact of the closure of the abalone has been almost like a sense of a loss of a
grieving,
total sense of grieving, and of course the kind of frustration with the way in which it often gets enforced, the regulations, and how it pans out for community members, and also the fact that abalone, despite the kind of current or a lot of the ecological writing that suggests that abalone was only consumed by indigenous communities after contact, we actually now have real hard empirical evidence that shows that no, in fact, Kakatla people have consumed abalone for millennia.
That brings up another theme that really struck me about your book is this idea that First Nations lived in harmony with the land, but that it wasn't actually an experience almost like agriculture, which you argue is not entirely the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, there is... I mean, one earlier version of my chapter about salmon fishing, I called it the disturbed environment, very deliberately, because the interaction between humans and the ecology around us, that's an act of disturbance, but it also creates a lot of biodiversity, and essentially, for millennia here, you can see the ways in which human investment of time, labor, and energy have actually, to a certain extent, created the environment that we currently see, or European settlers saw at the beginning of contact. It wasn't just a pristine, invented, new space untouched by humans. And we know from research with bears and with, for example, that they bring nitrogen into the forest.
Mm-hmm.
Human engagement with salmon probably augmented or stabilized salmon production levels, and we just see that across. And even the whole fact that there were abalone to harvest had to do with the fact that there were targeted exclusions of, removals of sea otters. And so it wasn't just that sea otters kept growing and growing, but human beings, the villages, would actually hunt them out. And so you then had these abalone refugia. So it's a whole far more complex than just the kind of classic, very simplistic kind of ecological model that gets presented.
Yeah, and that brings another question. You're an anthropologist. This book is called An Ethnography. It deals with some fairly heavy issues and history. Who is this book meant for?
Well, it actually speaks to two different audiences in general terms. And for one, there's an audience here at home in the community, and there's a kind of thirst for this kind of information written down to be used in the schools, to be used in education projects, and to be used in kind of a wider sort of just a sense of pride and understanding. There's also a wider community that needs to understand to see, and so when we live in an interacting world where more than it's not the same as it was 200 years ago, But people need to know about Kitkatla too, and I find that in the wider world, when you look at the academic literature, even the public literature, most of the writing is about either the Tsimshian peoples from the Skeena River, mm-hmm. The Naas, the Gitxsan.
Let me interrupt you. Why do you think people need to know about the Kitkatla specifically?
Because I think that the and I kind of touch on this in one of the chapters, the whole way in which the history has been shaped has created an image that actually isn't accurate, and so it's kind of created this particular kind of academic orthodoxy that has really is tied a lot more to contemporary political politics than it is to the underlying history and processes. Because when you actually do start tracing back in the ancient histories, you see the presence of Kitkatla on this coast for multiple millennia. In fact, many of the different other Tsimshian communities, related communities, have their origins in lineages from this area.
Mm-hmm. There's so much to talk about in this book, a great accomplishment. Charles Menzies, thanks for this.
Oh, you're welcome.
Charles Menzies, a member of the Kitkatla First Nation, also a professor of anthropology at UBC. He just launched his book in Kitkatla, and it's a good read. It's called People of the Salt Water.